Boker Tov, and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shirim and Daf Yomi. We are now in Ketubot in the 8th Perek on Daf Ayin Tet Amud Aleph. We have a relatively long piece to do today because we're going to do the two Mishnayot which are on Ayin Tet Amud Aleph, Mishnah Gimel and Dalad, and then the two halves of Mishnah He which appear separately on Ayin Tet Amud Bet, the second one continuing on in its discussion until Pei Amud Bet. Continuing on the theme of the status of a woman's property while she's married, status of money that's fallen to it before she's married, etc., we're now dealing with, in whatever status something is defined as nechse malog, up until now the notion was if she received real estate, because real estate always has perot attached to it, which is whatever benefit, whether it's rental, whether it's actual fruit, whether it's some other benefit that accrues, that's defined as perot. And we will get to in this podcast get into some of the details of defining when something is considered keren, in other words, capital, and when it itself is considered perot. Anyways, naflu la kesafim, if she got not real estate, but money. Hilakach ben karkav huachal perot. So you take the money, and then she's married, and she inherits from her mother $100,000 in cash. So how do you create perot with that? Ilakach ben karka. So the ideal is to take that money and use it to buy karka. Vuachal perot, and then the husband gets the benefit. The karka, of course, is hers, and it plays out as follows. And that way, perot tatlushin mina karka. Let's say she inherits $100,000 worth of fruit that has just been picked. Ilakach ben karka vuachal perot. Same deal. All right, so perot is like kesef. Perot over tlushin mina karka are like kesef. Now, hamachubarim bakarka, what if she inherits a field that now is laden with fruit, but the fruit is still connected to the field, or the potatoes are still in the field? Amar Meir, shamino ta kama hi yafa beferot, v'chama yafa b'lo perot. So Meir says we simply do an estimation on what the added value because of the perot is. Umotar lakach ben karka v'chal perot. And the extra that she gets from that is there. In other words, let's say that the field that she inherited is now worth $150,000 because it is ready to be harvested. Had it been an empty field, it would have been worth $100,000. So essentially, she got $50,000 worth of perot. So we take that and buy karka with it, and then same deal, the husband gets perot. Chacham omrim hamachubarim lakarka shalo. Chacham say no, the fruit that's part of the land belongs to him, that is perot. In other words, they go back to the earlier halacha and agree that if it's perot that are disconnected from the ground, that's classic, like safim, and therefore you buy karka with it. But if it's muhavrim karka, it's kikarka dami, and it belongs to him. If it's muhavrim karka, then it itself is the perot of the karka, and he gets to keep it. Now, that's chachamim. In the next Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon, again, like we had in Mishnah Bet, relative to Mishnah Aleph, here Mishnah Dalad, relative to Mishnah Gimel, Rabbi Shimon disagrees. He says, "Makom shiyipako chob b'chnisata, hurako chob b'tziyata." In the same circumstance where his power over her assets is stronger when they get married, has the same place at which it is diminished when they get divorced. Makom shurako chob b'chnisata, and in the same area where his strength is diminished when they get married, yipako chob b'tziyata. Now, what's that kitzad? Perotam b'chorim lakarka b'chnisata shelo b'tziyata shela. Anything that is connected to the ground, when they get married, that becomes his. Sounds like chachamim. But when they get divorced, then it becomes hers, because it's karka. Hatlushim mina karka, stuff that is not connected to the ground, b'chnisata shela. Because right now it's perot, and therefore it belongs to her. And therefore, again, you take it and you buy karka with it. By the way, this is exactly like chachamim so far. Uvitziyata shelo. But what happens as a result? Since it's called perot, therefore, when they divorce, he gets to keep it. Karka, she keeps, it's hers. All right, so that's Rabbi Shimon's calculus. We'll see where he differs with chachamim. It's one small area. Now, the Gemara immediately addresses something without telling us where it's going, which is that the opening line of the Mishnah told us what to do with money, and ideally should buy karka. But what happens if the couple agrees to buy something else? So that's fine. What happens if they disagree? Whose side wins? So here we go. Ara ubati, if one of them wants to buy land and the other wants to buy houses with that money, ara, then we go for land. And we always go for the more stable investment. Bati v'dikli, if it's houses versus date trees, bati, houses. Dikli v'ilani, if it's date trees versus other fruit trees, dikli, you go for the date trees. Ilani v'gufni, if it's fruit trees versus vines, ilani, you go for the fruit trees. Alright, so there's a hierarchy here of course, this is only if the couple disagrees on where to invest the peirot that are not going to be used for karka, the ksafim that are not going to be used for karka, that he will get peirot from. Now, this sounds like it's continuing the discussion, but it's really on a different topic. Abba Zradata, if let's say she gets a forest that has logs that have been chopped that are lying in the forest, or Pira de Chavri, or a fishery that has fish in it, which of course what they have in common is that she essentially got karka, but there are fungible items that are on the karka, or in the karka, as in the case of the fish. The question is, do they belong to the karka? Are they considered karka, or are they considered peirot? Now, amri la peirev, amri la karna. So there's a machloket, whether or not the fish or the logs are considered to be peirot, and then therefore you take it and buy a karka with it, or they consider themselves karka and it belongs to her. Now, klal de milta, the general rule when it comes to a tree is, giza o machlif, that is the same thing with the difference of bracha v'mabrei ha'adama, the famous psak of the Shulchan Aruch, that applies to bananas, etc. Giz omachlif, if it's a tree where the branch disappears and is renewed every year, then peira, then it's called peirot. Engiz omachlif, if that's not the case, where the branch remains all year and the buds just renew, then karna. It's considered a karen. Now, so Rabbi Yanai said, there's two different versions of the transmission. Hagonev vlad behemat malog. Here we go. A woman brings behemat malog into the marriage. Right? That means that the animal belongs to her. And if there's a divorce, she keeps the animal. However, the peirot of the animal belong to the husband, like any other malog. Now, a guy stole the offspring. Who does the offspring belong to? Belongs to the husband. But he belongs to the husband as peirot, not because he owns it. It belongs to him as peirot. Now, somebody stole it. Mishalem tashlume kefel. And here's the kicker, la'isha. The guy who has to pay tashlume kefel, which is the payment for gneva, goes to the woman. Why? Come on. And we'll see that does not accord, we think it does not accord with either of two opinions in regarding the status of Vlad Behemat Malog. Lok Rabbanim Lok Hananya. Titania. Vlad Behemat Malog. La Baal. Vlad Shivchat Malog La Isha. That Chachamim say that the offspring of Behemat Malog really belongs to the Baal. But the offspring of a Shivchat Malog, meaning a woman brings a Shivcha into the marriage, that goes La Isha. And what's their consideration? Well, we'll see in a moment. Hananya ben Achi Yoshiyahu Amar. So Yoshiyahu's nephew said, Asu Vlad Shivchat Malog Kvlad Behemat Malog. He says that the rabbis equated the two. Which means, by the way, everybody seems to agree that Vlad Behemat Malog really belongs to the husband. Now the question is, did they apply the same rule to Vlad Shivchat Malog, or did they distinguish? Now let's see why. So at this point it sounds as if neither one of these opinions is going to accord with our notion that Vlad Behemat Malog, the kefel, is going to go to the woman. The answer is Afilu Tema Divrei HaKol. The truth is everybody could agree with this. Peira tkinu l'arbanon, peira de peira lo tkinu l'arbanon. Because after all, remember, he does not get, nobody thinks that he gets Vlad Behemat Malog because he owns it. He gets Vlad Behemat Malog because he has a kinyan peirot in the behemah itself. And the Vlad is the peirot. But kefel is not the peirot. Kefel is the peira peirot, meaning it's the benefit of the offspring of the Behemat Malog. And the way that we approach it is to say that that's something the Rabbanon never gave him. The Rabbanon never gave him peira peirot. And therefore, the kefel goes to the woman, and that everybody will agree with. And parenthetically, what is their disagreement about? I understand Chananya's position that says that Vlad Behemat, anything that's Malog, Vlad anything Malog, Behemat or Shivcha, always goes Labal. Why the Lo Chashin L'mitai? His point is that we're not concerned that the mother, meaning the Shivcha or the animal, is going to die, in which case, the Vlad is now no longer peirot of something that she owns and she should get it. And therefore, we can't let the husband get benefit from it because the mother may die, unlike karka, where classic peirot, the karka is always around, with a living Karen, you have that problem. So Chananya says, we're not choshish for such things. We let him continue to peirot as long as the mother's alive. I understand that. El Rabbanon, but the Rabbanon's position, which is split between Shivchat Malog and Behemat Malog, is a little bit inconsistent. If they're concerned for death. Remember, every animal is going to die, every shifcha is going to die, everybody's going to die. So the question is just, do you make that part of your calculus? If you say that the possibility they might die, and therefore we should not regard the vlad as peirot, I feel vlad behemot malo glamilo, then it should also be true about a behema. If they're not concerned about mita, filu vlad shifchat malog rami, then the vlad shifchat malog should also belong to the baal. So the answer is liolam chay shilamita. The truth is they are concerned about mita. Shani bema deika ora. In other words, even if an animal dies, there's still something of value left to it, which is its pelt, which therefore the vlad can always be considered a peirot of something, as opposed to a shifcha, where if she dies, that's it. And therefore, they say, in the case of a shifcha, we say that the vlad of the shifcha does not go to the husband, because if the shifcha dies, then it's no more peirot, as opposed to the behema, where there's always some karen left around. Now, Amar Rav Huna bar Chiya mar Shmuel, halacha kechananya. Okay, so we rule like Chananya, which is to say that vlad behemat malog and vlad shifchat malog all belong to the husband. But we're going to put a caveat on that. And now we're going to introduce a subject which is going to come up in Mishnah Hay, which will start in the second half of Mishnah Hay, which will be at the bottom of this Amud. That even Chananya agrees that if she is divorced, even though the vlad of the shifcha, or the vlad of the behema, went to the husband, it's her job to take money and to buy it back because of Shevach Beit Aviyah. What's Shevach Beit Aviyah? I'll put a little note at the top of the page. It means the honor of her father's household. Or, alternatively, and there's a very big difference here, it may mean that she has rights because it's something that was in her family. In other words, she brought a shifcha into the marriage. The shifcha had a child. That child she has some sort of an attachment with because it's the child of the shifcha that she grew up with. So even though the husband may get the vlad, if she gets divorced, she should pay and get him out because it's like a lack of kavod for her father that his living things are now going to this other family. There's two ways to read it, and it'll make a remarkable difference, because if we read it that it is an issue of protecting the honor of her father, then perhaps she has a responsibility to buy it out. If, on the other hand, it's a right that she has, because she grew up with it, and she has a connection with it, then it'll just be an opportunity saying that she has the right to demand that the husband accept payment for it, but that she doesn't have such a responsibility. In any case, we'll see Shevach Beit Aviyah come up in a few lines. Amar Avraham Nachman, Hichnisa lo eiz lechalba. Let's say that she brought into the marriage a goat for purposes of milking, or a rachel, a ewe, for purposes of shearing, or a tarnigolet for laying eggs, or she brought in a tree that was to be used for its fruit. The husband can continue to spend it all the way until the essential item is used up. Nachman, so Nachman adds on to that, that if she brings in a garment, the fancy garment that he could wear, then that's called peirot. So the same halacha applies, which is he can continue wearing it till it becomes tattered. You know, she can't claim you're destroying my karen, because those sort of things, which are garments, which are trees, which are animals that bear fruit or animals that milk, etc. Those are things where clearly the peirot are something that erodes the karen, and therefore if she brought that into the marriage, the husband can continue to enjoy the peirot until the karen really is expended, until the animal is no more milk, etc. Okay, now, come on. Ki haitana detanya hamelach v'hachol. Rav Nachman's statement that you can continue using the garment until it's used up, the husband can use it until it's used up, follows the following opinion that said, HaMelach ve'achol harei ze peirot. If they have, let's say, a salt mine, then that is considered peirot, the salt relative to the mine. Machporet shel tzri, pir shel gofrid, machporet shel tzri, v'meir merkan v'chacham omim peirot. If you have, let's say, a potash, a sulfur mine, something of that sort, then the mine itself is the karka, and what you mine out of it is the peirot. Rameir says it's karen, but Chachamim say it's peirot. We're following Chachamim here. And therefore, in the same way, even though when you mine something, you essentially eat up, you erode the karka, as opposed to normal peirot, where the karka is, in the next year, is arable again, nonetheless, that's still considered peirot. Okay, Bishimon omer makom shiipako cho. So in the second Mishnah, Bishimon had his calculus. And we said, Bishimon hainu tanakama, sounds like the Chachamim. That's a marava, mechubarin b'shat yitziyai kebenayu. If you notice, the last thing that Rabbi Shimon said, which is the perot ha-mechubarin b'karka, when she comes into the marriage, what was his last line? Belongs to him, but when she leaves, it belongs to her. That's something the Chachamim did not say. And so there is one difference between Rabbi Shimon and a Chachamim. Okay, now the next Mishnah, which is Mishnah Hey, the first half. Naflula avadim u'shfachot zekinim. Let's say that she has old slaves that come to her in a Yerusha while she's married. We have a problem here, is that they're not really capable of doing much work, but they do have some value. So we treat them like kesef. Yimachru v'dakach ben karka v'chol perot, the same thing we had before. However, Rav Gamliel says, lo timkor m'nei she'en sherech beit avia. These are slaves from her family's house, and therefore she should not sell them. And therefore she keeps them around, and they're around until they grow older, they die, whatever. Now, naflu hazeitim u'gfanim u'zkinim. She has an old orchard, an old olive grove or vineyard, again from the family. Again, they're not able to produce perot. Again, the position of Chachamim is that you treat it like kesef, sell it by karka, he eats perot. Rabbi Yehuda takes the same position Shimon Gamliel took in the previous line. Again, it's something that belongs to her family's house. She should not sell it. It should not be sold. It stays there and it doesn't produce perot. No, it's better. It's still better than nothing. Now, Amarav, Kahana Amarav, Machloke Shnaflu B'Sadeh Shela. The first version of this is that the Machloke between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, and the second thing about the olives, about the olive grove and the vineyard, is only if it fell in a field that was her field. Right? Meaning that it's not as if she got isolated olive trees that were in some other field and she only had rights to pick the tree, but it was something that she got with the field, meaning that it was an ancestral piece. But if it's in some other field, then everybody agrees you sell it. There's no Shevach Beit Aviyah here because it's the tree belonged to the family. Who cares? It's not in land that was associated with the family. Shum the Kachal Yakarna. And the other reason is because it's going to totally eat up the entire Karen. If the entire Karen is just a tree, then it's gone. Now, so therefore you sell it. And after all, since this is an old tree and it's not producing much, there's nothing to it. Matkim of Yosef. Hare Avadim Ushvachot. But take a look at the first half of the Mishnah. The Chisadesh Eina Shela Adami. Remember, these avadim are independent. They're not sitting on land. They're moving around, just like trees that may not be on her land. Upligi. And there, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel had the same machloket, which we assume is a parallel machloket with that of Rabbi Yehuda in the second half. Elaid marachimah. Really, Rav's statement should be read as follows. The machloket, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Chachamim, is specifically when it falls, Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, specifically when it falls, when the olive groves are not in a field she owns. In other words, the family had holdings of olive groves in somebody else's field, and it fell to her, which means there's no association, direct association of the land with her family's house. But if it's her field, then everybody agrees that she should not sell it because of the consideration of Shevach Beit Aviyah. Okay, now we have the second half of Mishnah Hay, which is a thorny issue. Which is, remember, the husband gets Nichsim Alog, gets all the perot of Nichsim Alog, but he also has to take care of Nichsim Alog. And he's going to be interested in taking care of Nichsim Alog because he'll want them to continue producing. But problem is, what happens on occasions where his expenditures are greater than his benefit? Let's say a guy expends money on fertilizer and on workers to harvest, and etc. Let's say he ended up expending a lot and only got a little bit out of it. Or the opposite. Quid pro quo, and that's it. We don't start making calculations. So if the guy spent $100,000 to make this field work well, and he only got the first year's benefit of it, $100, and then they got divorced, too bad. The field goes back to her, and he has no claim and say, well, look, I spent $100,000 making your field good. On the other hand, let's say he got lucky and he married her just at a time when the field was coming into its own, and it only cost him $20 to take care of the field, and he got $1 million out of it, and then they get divorced. She has no claim. Turn around and say, you got all of these perot. All right, now, but if he expended and did not get even one bit of benefit, then he should take a shvua at the time of the divorce, or his estate will take a shvua at the time of the will, the at the time of after the when they're settling up with the almana, as to how much he expended, and they'll take that out of the ketubah. All right, now v'chama kimas, so the Gemara wants to ask right away, what is a little bit? We say even if he ate a little bit, then he lost all of his expenditures. Rasi afilu groger atachat, even one fig. But v'hushachlo derech kavod, as long as he ate it in a proper way, meaning he ate it like regular human food, not where he gnawed on it, or not where it was animal food in the field and he just chomped on some straw. That doesn't count. You'll see why I'm saying it that way. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Beirav, so he said in Beirav, they said, afilu shigre de tamri, even some smashed dates. Boy Rav Bibi, chutzva de tamri mai, what about chuvtza de tamri, which is dregs of dates that they use, that's at the end of making the mead that's left at the bottom of the barrel. Is that considered, if you ate that, is that considered that you ate from the field and therefore all your expenditures are lost? So the answer is teiku. Unclear whether that's considered derech kavod. Now, lo achla derech kavod mai. What happens if you eat it in a not derech kavod? What's the shear? Because the shear was one fig if you ate it derech kavod. What about not? Ma'ula pligi ba trei mor rab mor rava. We have a machloka between two Palestinian amoraim. Charamar b'chi isar. Charamar b'chi dinar. It's a value. One of them said if you ate an isar's worth, right, which is, we'll say, a relatively small coin, a few dollars worth, and the other says a dinar, which is 24 times as much, which is already a significant amount, then even though you ate it shelo derech kavod, that's considered benefiting from the field. And we'll see an example of this in a minute. Amri dayani de pumbadita. So Papa, Rabbi Rav Shmuel, who was the dayan of pumbadita, Rashi points us to the end of the first paragraph of Sanhedrin, quotes Avad Rav Yehuda, that Rav Yehuda, who was the great gaon of pumbadita, the great Rosh Shiv in pumbadita, said, Uvda b'chavileis mot, he actually ruled in the case where a man fed his animal some leaves or some branches and said, you fed him more than a dinar, let's say, whatever it was, even though it's not derech kavod, nonetheless, you benefited from the field and you have no claim on the expenditures. Now, Rav Yehuda l'tameh, Rav Yehuda is being consistent with his own position. T'yam Rav Yehuda, achla or lash v'it v'kilayim. Let's say that a man is sitting on a field. Remember, chazkat raya is when a person is sitting on a field for X amount of time, somewhere between 18 months and 3 years, machloket tanaim, in the first mishnah in chazkat habatim. And then somebody comes up after all that time and says, what are you doing in my field? And if the person who's sitting on the field can demonstrate that the fellow who's protesting was in town and knew about it and had access and didn't say anything for that length of time, that's a raya that the field really belongs to him. Of course, if he doesn't have the shtar. So now, what constitutes a chazaka? So Rav Yehuda says, even if the fellow ate stuff which means that he really didn't really eat it, but he fed it to his animals, like orla or shvit, which is hefker to everybody, etc., hareza chazaka. So Rav Yehuda says that feeding stuff to your animals is still considered spending, and therefore would also constitute a benefit to you on the field, so that you lose your expenditures. So special halacha, if a man marries, and this is kiddushik tana, which means kiddushin derabanan, and the man is in charge of the property, and if he expends on the property, kemotzi al nichse acher dami. The halacha is that that's not like a regular marital thing, where the minute he gets any benefit, he's lost his expenditures. Rather, if this marriage doesn't work out and she's mine and leaves, then we make a calculation of how much he spent and how much he benefited, and if he spent more than he benefited, then he should get that money back, etc. What's the reason? My time avdu rabbanon katakanta keichad lo nifsedinu. The rabbanon wanted to make a takana so that the husband should be careful to keep the field in good shape. And therefore, they said that we're going to allow him to keep a calculation of how much he spent. He shouldn't feel like everything he's putting into this field he's going to lose in any case. Now, ahi itata denafla arba me'azuzi bechozai. This is a little bit of a sad story. It's a woman who had a 400 zuz Yerusha fall to her in the place called Bechozai in Bavel. Azal gavra apik shit mea aiti arba mea. So her husband had to spend 600 zuz to make the journey to go get the 400 zuz. Evidently 400 zuz is something he could invest or something, but in the meantime he spent more than the value of the thing itself. On the way back, he needed one zuz. He had 400 zuz of hers in his pocket, and he needed to use one zuz for food or for lodging or whatever it may be, and he took it from there. After the coming to Rav Ami, so then they came to Rav Ami, evidently on a divorce, and Marle, Masha Tzio Tzio, Masha Chalachal. He says, too bad, you already benefited from the field. You used that one zuz. So therefore, all of your expenditures, your 600 expenditures are no good, and the 400 goes to her, because it's her Karen, at 399, we'll say. So now, Amrule Rabbanon Rav Ami. So the Talmidim said to Rav Ami, that's not really the case. When do we say that whatever he benefited, if he benefited even a little bit, then that already doesn't give him a claim on his expenditures? That's if he ate payrot. However, this guy ate Karen. This guy ate actually the money that was hers, not the benefits of the money. So this was just simply hotza. Basically, this guy spent 600 to get her 400, and then he took one out of the 400, but that's not eating payrot. And therefore, he should take a shvua to the effect of that he spent the 600. Of course, he got one, he has to give back, and he should be able to get 599 back for what he did. But we'll see, it's not exactly 599. Now, the Mishnah said, Yishava kamahotzi v'yitol. He should take an oath to the effect of how much he spent and take that. However, that's not exactly the case, because that's only if there's as much profit as there's on, and like in the previous case, he can't ask her to pay him 599 zuz when Chalchi got his 400. He can't ask her for anything more than what she got as benefit. Now, Abaye reads it this way, that when Rav Asi limited the halacha to say that's only when the benefit is as much as the expenditure, he says because if the benefit's greater than the expenditure, he could take the expenditure without a shvua. So I'm only Rav, imken atu the rumi. If that's the case, the guy's gonna deceive and going to lie and say, I spent this amount of money. He said, you benefited $1 million. I spent $999,000, 99 cents, and et cetera. And he'll take it without a shvua according to you. That doesn't work. He said the limitation is as follows, that if your expenditure was greater than the profit, he only can take expenditures which are the same amount as the profit. So a man got a field worth $100,000. He put $100,000 into it, and now it's worth $150,000 because it took all of the infrastructure that he worked on. Now it's worth $150,000. So even with an oath, all he can get is 50 out, because he can't take out more than he helped appreciate the value of the field. Uvishvua, and with a shvua, of course, Rav would never allow him to take any of it without a shvua, because otherwise he could lie. Now, Ibayelu, Baal Shahorid Arisin Tachtav, let's say that a husband brings a sharecropper in to work the field. The sharecropper means somebody who gets 20% or a fixed amount, aris, charich, but has a certain amount that he's going to get from the yield every year. All right, so mao. Adai to the Baal Nachid, is this guy coming in as a substitute for the Baal, which means istalik le Baal istalikule, or the who? So that means that when the Baal is out, then this guy's out, which means that if the guy got benefit, then that's as if the Baal got benefit, and therefore the Baal can't turn around and sue for the expenditures. Or do you say that the aris is more attached to the land than to the Baal? That the land, which is still there, is there essentially for the aris. In which case, the Baal will not have been considered to have gotten any benefit. And then he can sue for the expenditures as long as they don't exceed the profit, according to Rav. So now, Matki Florava Barav Chanan. So he asked the following challenge. How's that any different than going into somebody else's property and you start planting stuff without asking him and you put a lot of work into it? Shamino viadual tachtunat. They measure how much you benefited, but you've got the burden of proof. So why don't we here say that the Baal has the burden of proof to say that the aris is not associated with him, in order that the Baal should be able to, and he could never really prove that. So the answer is, Hatam Leika Inish Tatarach. In that case, nobody else is doing it except you walked into the guy's field. Hacha, Ikabal Tatarach. Here, the husband got an aris. If the aris doesn't work, the Baal works. So now, my Havela, so what's the final ruling? Am Rav Huna, Beredu Rav Yeshua, Chazina. We take a look. Ibal aris. So if the husband himself is somebody who could work the field, so he's still like the Baal, he's still Akulahu. that if the Baal is gone, they're gone, meaning that they are really in place of the Baal, and if they benefited, then that means the Baal benefited. But if the husband is not somebody who could do that, then the land is there for Arisim, and they ate, and he didn't get any benefit from it. Good. Because, by the way, think about this. The benefit that the sharecroppers get is basically a payment that the Baal is giving, because instead of the Baal getting the peirot, that amount is going to the Arisim. Now, Ibayaluhu, Baal Shemachar Karka LePerot. Let's say that a husband took the woman's karka and he sold it in order to get food into the family. Mao Miyare Maida Kona Akni Odoma Kitkino Abanon Perot LeBaal Mishumrav Chabeta. Do we say that after all what he sold is a valid sale? Or do we say, the purpose of peirot is to have more peirot in the house, right? And she'll have more peirot there. It's more like for her benefit. Aval izvune lo, but we never allowed it, gave it to him to sell. So let's see. Yehuda bar Rav Marei Mar Mishmei de Rav Amar Masha Sasui. He says the sale is good. Papa Mar Mishmei de Rav Lo Asavalo Klum. He says that Rava said. So we have machlok at what Rava said. As he said, Rav Papa, who is a far more mainstream tradent of Rava's traditions, said that Rava said that the sale is no good. Papa, he said, "How do you hear about my Mar?" And I'll explain why my opposite number said what he did. Lava Ferushit Mar. He didn't hear it from Rava because I know what Rava said. He inferred it, and he inferred it wrongly. Rav Papa claims why? There was a woman. She brought two shvachot into the marriage. In the meantime, the husband went and married another woman. While he's married to this first woman, he took one of the shvachot and brought it in to be a servant for this other wife. So this for a woman who brought in the two shvachot came to the Rava. She kept screaming and saying, "Rava, find me, do justice for me. After all, I brought these two shvachot in, they're mine, nichsimalog, and he took one of them, and he's having her serve this other wife that he just married." So now Rava paid no attention. So man de chaza savar, mishum de savar amasha sasui. The one who was watching, meaning Yehuda bar Meimar, thought the reason Rava is not paying attention is because the Baal can do what he likes with the nichsim alog, and if he sells it for some other benefit, that's fine. Masha sasui velohi. But Rav Papa says that's not the reason. Mishum Rava chbeta. Because the reason that peirot are there are not because the husband has total control and could sell them, but rather so that there should be more benefit in the house. Dahinu peirot. V'hakaravach. And here, by having this woman who's taking care of his second wife, so there's more ravach in the house. Everybody's got someone taking care of them. V'hechata mal shemachar karka l'peirot lo'asav alaklum. We accept Rav Papa's reading that Rava said, and this is halacha, that if a husband does sell karka for purposes of peirot, the sale is invalid. My time, so why is that? Abaya Mar Hashin and Shema Tachzif. They're concerned that the Lokeach, in the meantime, is going to not pay good attention to the field, because after all, he knows that if the husband dies first or divorces, the wife can come and claim the karka back. So he's not going to take good care of it. Rava Mar Mishum Ravach Beita. Rava says no, because the entire purpose of giving the husband rights over the field is just to have Ravach in the house, but not to give him the right to sell. Now, my binayu, so what's the practical difference between Abai and Rava's reasoning? Ika binayu ara de mikrav lamata. The first one is if the land's right near the city, because in that case, the woman could keep an eye on it. So we don't have a problem of Shema Tachsif, but we do have the problem of peirot in the house. Inami bal arisu, or the opposite, or a case where the husband himself is an aris and could work the field. Again, in which case the Shema Tachsif is not there. Inami zuzi v'ko'avid bo'iska. Or if you have the opposite case, where the husband sells it and then uses the money to invest and bring more Isaac into the house, in which case the Revach Beta is there, and that you've solved, because that really is Perot, but on the other hand, the concern that her field may not be properly taken care of continues to be a concern, as Abaye outlined. Tov, Mirtz Hashem, in the next podcast, we'll pick up at the Mishnah Shomeret Yavam, and Daf Pei Amud Bet. And it will take us two podcasts, but we will complete the parak at Pei Bet Amud Bet at that time. Everybody should have a wonderful day.